here, CM Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC, live from Orange County, that's right, from our undisclosed location, deep behind the orange curtain. Look, boy, is everybody sick where you work? I'm just curious. Because I promise you that I might be the plague at our office. Now, we got about 70 people or so at the office where I work, and I'll tell you, and it's unbelievable how many people are sick and how badly they're sick. Well, you know Missy here. I mean, and just here on the show in the studio. Well, she was sick. You were so sick. It was the worst you've been in 20 years, right? Is what you told me. She didn't come in for 2 weeks. This is unusual. I'm telling you, there's a dedicated person here. It's Missy, not that Robbie guy. Just kidding. So there's this girl. Speaking of dedicated, there's this girl that's at the office. Great, a fairly new employee. She comes in yesterday, Monday, and she looks like death, right? She's pale. She's coughing, she's hacking, and I tell her, please, go home, go to the doctor, get it taken care of. Because, by the way, we've all had strep throat, we've all had sinusitis, we know what it is, okay? I mean, last week, I don't know if you could tell, yesterday, I'm finally getting beyond it, but I've been so sick. It's because if it's not my kids giving me a disease that they've brought home from school, I'm getting it from the office. So at any rate, I tell this girl, please go home. Like, just go take care of it. Go to the doctor. So she does go to the doctor. She gets her antibiotics. She comes in today. I see her today. And again, she's sitting there at her desk. And on the other side of her cubicle, it's kind of this setup where it's open office, but there's a series of desks around there in a cubicle. And the other gal sitting next to her, I can see, just looks miserable. And it's because she's getting coughed on, right, by this girl. I said, are you okay? Are you still not healthy? No, I'm going to be good. And it, of course, I said, please, just continue taking your meds. You're not doing us any favors by being here. You're not doing yourself any favors. And look at poor Yas over there. She wants to be healthy. And Yas is like, oh, I feel a pain in my throat. And I'm thinking, no, you need to go to the doctor too. And I'm bringing all this up. Because it's an interesting thing. We're driven by this Protestant work ethic, aren't we? Where it's you're a martyr if you drag your lifeless corpse to work in the morning. Look, I'm here. See, boss, I can do this. The boss says, what a dedicated person, right? Ah. Just fantastic. Good job. Yeah, that's somebody I can count on, rain or shine. But the truth is, I'll tell you, this is my perspective from an employer. I don't like it one bit. We've lost so much money just in the last 30, 60 days. And the amount of absenteeism. And it always happens that somebody tries to work through it. They come to the office and they infect three people. We should move to Japan. You know, in Japan, it's considered bad form to come to work sick, to cough on people. You know that, you know, when they wear the masks, you see the people with wearing masks. It's not because they don't want to get sick. The wearer of the mask in Japan, it's an honor thing. It's a duty. You're duty bound to the society that you're in to not infect people. So if you've got a little cough, you know, you put on your mask. Should hand out masks at the office. That's what I ought to do. No. In Japan, you're not even. My dad told me this. We were going to Japan once. Now, remember, don't blow your nose at the restaurant. I thought, what are you talking about? You can't blow my nose. No, seriously. In Japan, you have to go to the restaurant. It's just considered politically impolite. Excuse me. I want to bring politics and everything, but impolite to go and just blow your nose out and open in a restaurant. So go to the bathroom, blow your nose. I think that would be a great thing. Can you imagine? You're sitting in the, you know what I'm talking about. You're sitting in the dining room somewhere enjoying a good meal and somebody's hacking and sneezing and emptying their nose. Anyway, it's gross stuff. And I'm telling you, if you are sick, just stay home, please. You do nobody any favors, and working through it, you just end up getting everyone else ill. Oh my gosh. Anyway, so what's going on? Hillary surfaced. Speaking of coughing, that's right. Hillary is back. She appeared at some women's event and did a little chat with Christiane Amanpour. And she started talking a little bit about the election. By the way, you've got to feel bad for her. You cannot imagine what it is like to suffer this kind of a loss. Well, it's because it was so unexpected. Did anybody? No one expected it, not the least of which her. And now there's this, have you heard, there's this unauthorized book coming out describing kind of the moments that led up to her losing the race. And I read an excerpt of it. Very interesting stuff about her. She was on election night, was in Manhattan at a very fancy hotel, top floor, big, you know, presidential suite. Which I think might have jinxed it. I don't know. But she's up there and she's Bill's there and all top, you know, campaign staff, Bobby Mook, and of course, long-suffering aide Huma Abedin. And they're watching the returns and she just, I mean, you can imagine, she's just catatonic looking at the TV, doesn't believe it. They've got people calling them, you know, Florida Falls. You remember what happened, how it all came down. And then I guess she gets a call from Obama. And Obama is actually the one who encouraged her to concede. I don't know if you knew this, but Obama's like, hey, it's time to I want a smooth transition of power. I don't want this dragging out. You need to do the right thing. And so so Huma places a call to Kellyanne Conway. And I guess they connect through their cell phones. I don't know. It wasn't a laptop. It wasn't Anthony Weiner's laptop, or Anthony Weiner's phone. We don't know that either. But anyway, so there's this. Can you imagine that scene? So it's been a little while here, but Hillary's still in a little bit of shell shock. But Hillary isn't the only one. Christiane Amanpour is asking her about, you know, what she thought happened in the election and how it all went down. But Hillary's not the only one doing soul searching on this, because the Democrats are at it too. They are trying to figure out why they lost, and I'm mystified by this. They still do not get it. And you would think by now there'd be some glimmers of hope. What happened 2 days ago, over the weekend? Who is it? Tom Perez. You hear about this abortion issue? So there's a candidate, and this candidate, it's some local election. Where is this? Is this in Kansas? There's a candidate that the Democrats are supporting, Heath Mello in Omaha, Nebraska. Excuse me, Omaha. And this Heath Mello, this is a guy. It's a mayoral race. So this is a really little race. It's just for mayor in Omaha. But it's become a lightning rod. And if you haven't heard about it, it's become a big deal because this Mello guy used to be pro-life. And this kind of activist group, a pro-abortion group called Nural, they lost their minds over it. They found out that there were two different Democrats running for office, and the other guy was dedicated pro-life, and this guy was a little bit wobbly on the issue. And it led to the head of the Democratic Party, Tom Perez, issuing a statement that said basically every Democrat should support a woman's right to choose, and it's not negotiable. So what that means is you know, if you want to run for office as a Democrat and have the support of the Democratic Party, you have to be pro-life, pro-choice. Excuse me. Now, you know, this is an interesting thing. I tell you right now, there are lots and lots of Catholics, of Mormons, of other people who are, for whatever reason, opposed to abortion, who are loyal, faithful Democrats. And I would also say there are many, many voters out there that maybe don't live in New York and don't live in L.A. and, you know, but might be in the heartland, who are good, you know, Christian people, and for whom abortion is a deeply offensive personal thing that they do not want any part of, who are for certain alienated by this. And it's an example. This abortion thing, it's a small thing. It may turn into something bigger, but it's an example where the Democrats have decided that they are going to double down on their base. They want to go after their base. And their base, though, that's an interesting thing, because who is the base of the Democratic Party? It's evolved. You know that Trump actually got the same voters as Obama in a lot of ways. I mean, it was Trump captured working class white voters. And so did Obama. And what is, there's a great article that came out, Alex Rorty and McClatchy, talking about this guy, Matt Cantor. And Cantor's senior vice president of a company called Global Strategy Group. You probably haven't heard of them, but they're like the number one Democratic Party think tank. And they have been given the mission to do the postmortem on what the heck happened in 2016. And they basically did kind of their own census with the election. They went through all the voting records in all 50 states. They looked at who voted, how they voted, how these people voted in the past, right? So they compared behavior of voters in past elections. You know, did they vote? Did this voter, for example, consistently vote Democrat? Or is this somebody who, switches around? That type of thing. Is this somebody who missed elections? Did certain voters come out of the woodwork that maybe didn't vote in previous elections? You get the point. And in this analysis, this Cantor guy is basically saying, look, I think that doubling down on our base is not the way to go. But I'm reading this and I'm listening to it, and I've heard him give a few different interviews on this topic, and I'm looking at it and I'm going, well, here's the question I want answered. Who is your base? It's a legitimate question. Because, you know, when I was, forget that. You don't have to go that long, that far back. Since the era of Clinton, certainly, working white voters, those were Democrat voters. We're not talking about a group of people that were just specific to Obama. Those are people that voted for Clinton. They voted for other Democrats in the past. This was traditionally a core constituency group, and the Democrats are already talking about working white voters as being, you know, this may be this group that we don't really need to be appealing to. And it's so fascinating because, look, if you're looking at this and going, how does the party come back? How does this whole landscape, political landscape, evolve from here? You've got to look at this. Is this party doing anything to really make its message sellable? So the base, what's the base of the Democratic Party? The way it seems to me, at least from what I'm reading in between the lines, is minorities, people of different sexual orientations, And so on and so forth. You've got these what identified subgroups of our society. And I don't mean subgroups as inferior. I just mean as separate groups and itemizing people and putting them in little boxes and saying, you, I identify you. You have a need. You're a group that we want to appeal to. You're the person we want to go to. And on the other side of this, the contrast to this, if they have to wonder why Trump won, Trump didn't do any of this fine tooth combing through data. He just got up there and spoke from his heart. And that's what's, I think, missing in all of this. So when we come back, I got a couple clips for you of Hillary analyzing what happened. And I think it's really interesting stuff, because no time in my life have I seen a major party so completely lost in the wilderness. All right, Sam Rogowski back right after this.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Well, Bill Maher said the same thing, essentially, right? He goes, ease up on the identity politics. Obsessing over Pocahontas is a problem. Sam Rogowski here, back talking about Hillary in the news. She's gave a little interview here, or sit down, a chat with Christiane Amanpour today at a Women for Women event. And talking about her campaign, you know, she was asked to kind of explain why it was that perhaps it didn't work out the way she'd hoped. And here's probably one of the best clips of her explanation.
It wasn't a perfect campaign. There is no such thing. But I was on the way to winning until the combination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28th and Russian WikiLeaks raised doubts in the minds of people who were inclined to vote for me but got scared off. And the evidence for that intervening event is, I think, compelling, persuasive. And so we overcame a lot in the campaign. But as Nate Silver, who, doesn't work for me, he's an independent analyst, but one considered to be very reliable, you know, has concluded, you know, if the election had been on October 27th, I'd be your president.
I'll tell you how reliable Nate Silver was. On election day, he had Trump's chances of winning at what? What was it? Let me look. 28%. I know. Hillary should have been listening to Sam Nation. But the greater point of it is, look, intervening event, Comey letter, WikiLeaks, all this stuff. You know, Trump was on tape saying the most lewd and offensive and inexcusable thing. I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying it wasn't like Trump was without his headwinds, or we'll call them, I guess, intervening events. He also had the entire media against him. So the thing is, there's two different issues here. Why did Hillary lose? And to what extent did she lose, right, on her own merits? And then what part of this is the fault of the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party platform? Because this is a separate issue. And I'll tell you, the thing is, as it gets analyzed these two different ways, my answer to this is I don't think you can analyze those two things separately. Bernie, right? Bernie Sanders. I don't think that we are a predominantly socialistic country. I don't think that socialism wears well. It does certainly among these, you know, base Democratic voters who love to confiscate rich people's money and give it out to poor, you know, people who are going to college in their 40s. I get that. But listen to me. Why am I telling you? I've said this again and again. I think that Bernie had a chance of winning this thing. And it's because he was perceived as being truthful and honest, and he was perceived as being genuine. And I think that there was this, there. You want to talk about an intervening event? I think that at this critical juncture, people were craving authenticity. And it may well have been because for 8 years, we heard terrific, inspiring, lofty speeches from Obama. And then nothing. Blah. You know, you had a guy who ran on a campaign promises of transparency in government, detangling us from foreign wars and conflicts. Got a peace prize for it, for Pete's sake, before he even did anything. Talked about our civil rights, all, you know, privacy rights, all this stuff. And then nothing happened. And so people, I think after that, were just like, all right, we're done. We tried this Bush guy. He ran as a conservative and turned into a, you know, I don't know what. And then we got this Obama guy. We at least hoped he was going to be X, Y, and Z. He wasn't any of that. So I'm just, people were ready to just go with a gut. And the so analyzing it any different way, you know, you've ideas win, but you've got to base, there's got to be something more there. And the communication that Trump had, as well as Bernie in this last election, that's really what it is. Of course, Hillary's not going to say, hey, it was because no one likes me. No, she couldn't say that. All right. We got John Wolfe up with the news next, and I'll be back right after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rujofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Bottom of the hour here on a Tuesday evening. Hope everybody is doing well. Now, you've heard about the budget. You've heard about this. I mean, and it's a sick capitulation, right, to the Democrats. They got everything that they wanted. And I'll tell you how all of this DNC nonsense shenanigans in the background I've been talking about, right, about how they can't find their way. Hillary doesn't know why she lost. The party's in the woods, in the wilderness, wandering. I'll tell you a little more about Tom Perez. I want to tell you how this all fits into the budget and what's going on right now. To pass the budget, the Republicans need 60 votes in the Senate. That's really what this is all about. Whatever budget is drafted in the House can be voted on in the House and then is sent up to the Senate, where the current rules require that there are 60 votes. Now, the only way you really can, the only way you can get anything done, of course, is if you get around that rule, or it doesn't help that they might have a majority. Republicans don't have 60 votes. That's what it comes down to. Now, guess who has the most to lose in the next senatorial election? Well, the GOP is only defending 8 seats. Do you know how many the Democrats are defending? Any idea? 25. Got to understand, this is huge. This is why, by the way, everything really matters right now, and how, I don't know, and how what's happening in Congress, what's happening with the presidency is portrayed. This is why, one of the reasons the media is fighting so hard. The fear, okay, is that these midterm elections that are so crucial in the Senate are going to swing toward the Republicans. Because if the Republicans have the 60 votes, it becomes a lot easier to do things for which there is, at least on the Republican side, some unanimous agreement. Now, I know that's a big ask for unanimous agreement between establishment Republicans and rogue Trump. But I think you get the point that this is important. So now, I, of course, am always interested in the political ground game and figuring out what's going to happen. And you probably are interested in it, too, because you want to be the smart guy in the room and talk to people at work or, at, you know, get togethers and say, oh, you know what? This is what's going to happen. If the Democrats don't get a grip on their party, Okay. They're not going to be winning. They're not, those 25 seats they're defending. Granted, some of them are pretty safe, right? We got states that, you know, that the no way is a Republican going to come in. But the wobble is not going to lean against the Republicans, right? If there is a shift, if there are positions, are seats that are transferred, if you will, from one column to the other, that shift will tend to favor the party, right? Where you at least have a president right now. I know the media thinks he's a clown and they're calling him all sorts of nasty things, but you got a guy who's speaking from the heart. You've got the guy that's communicating to the people that he's speaking in a way that is inspiring some degree of confidence. And especially when your opponent is a party that's cutting everybody up into little subgroups and saying, okay, we're going to cater to this little group of people and this little group of people and this guy over here and that little, you know, left-handed, you know, whatever it is. I mean, I have to be careful what I say, but you know what I'm talking about. The leaders, I'm not saying, look, it's when I was talking about the abortion issue before. And Tom Perez laying down the law saying, look, you can't run as a Democrat. The Democrat Party is not going to support you if you are running as a pro-lifer. It's just one of the ways. It's such a hard line issue. The Republicans don't do that. I mean, it's ironic, right? You think the Republicans are the ones that are, you know, that are crazy on the far extreme of things. It's unbelievable. The Democrats have got going down this road. So I think this bodes well for the upcoming midterms. We'll see. All right, back right after this.
Talk radio, 790 KABC.
And welcome back, Sam Rejofsky. All right, so Tom Perez, he's the new chair of the Democratic Party. And I want to play for you here what he said on April 19th, talking to Mika Brzezinski on Morning Joe. Right now, Mika, she's sort of not really a journalist. She's a agitator for the Democratic Party. And in that sense, if you are the head of the Democratic Party and you are on Mika's, getting interviewed by Mika, these are softballs, right? I mean, you're on friendly turf. And so here's the exchange.
When the pundits kept saying you're never going to get to 43 and now you're on you're first and goal at the 8-yard line, we've got to punch it in. And we're going to punch it in by organizing.
Tom, you know what I'm talking about. We have a party that needs work. That needs to get back engaged with the American people in a way where they connect with those who feel left out. What does this candidate and this party need to do between now and June 20th to bring it over the top?
Organize. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're going to be out on the street. There's still opportunity out there. There's still voters who didn't vote before that are eligible to vote now. We've identified them, and we will be out there knocking on their doors.
Huh? That's it. We're going to organize. We're going to organize. We got a 50-state strategy. We're going to do this. It's just because we didn't get out enough. We didn't get out the vote. You know, Washington Post did a poll yesterday. I think this was released where they asked how many people think the Democratic Party is in touch and out of touch. 28% only think that the Democratic Party is in touch. Now, look, interesting. You're probably wondering, how did the Republicans fare? Only marginally better. Good question. Only marginally better. 38%. The point is people don't trust politicians. Wow, we needed a poll to tell us that. And the answer to this, then, is you've got to have ideas. You've got to have appeal. You've got to, I mean, you've, look what, the, again, if you think that what happened in 2016 on November the 8th was a lightning in a bottle, that it was a fluke, that it was because the Russians hacked the election, that it was because I don't know, whatever intervening events, right? That's Hillary's new word, intervening events, whatever those were, Comey and the letter and WikiLeaks and whatnot, regardless of all those little things, at the end of the day, it comes down to the big picture. And the big picture is the Democrats are going too far left. That's the point with this abortion thing. It's too far left. There's an Ohio representative, Tim Ryan, who's a Democrat. And he's reacting to this Perez thing, you know, this Tom Perez guy, and saying, you know, because Perez went out and said, if you want to run as a Democrat, you got to be pro-choice. And this is what he says. So according to Ryan, this is from The Blaze, right? According to Ryan, though, it is negotiable being pro-life, pro-choice. If Democrats ever want to regain majorities in Congress, Ryan says it's necessary for the left to welcome pro-life Democrats. Absolutely. This is a quote. Absolutely. Needs to be if you want to have a majority party in the country. If you ever want to govern again. So don't give up. Look, it's frustrating. You're looking at all this stuff going on. I hear people saying, well, shoot, why are we electing Republicans if the Democrats keep on winning? I get it. But on the flip side of it, look at the determination when the president and Congress and congressional Republicans were on the same page with Neil Gorsuch. It happened. Rules were suspended. You use their 51 votes, done and done. Signed, sealed, and delivered. And that type of conservative consensus between the president and Congress is possible. And I don't see Congress, because of all of this, what I'm saying, I don't see Congress losing ground, the Republicans in Congress losing ground here coming up in the midterms. And that is right now conventional wisdom. All the pundits are saying that Trump is setting the Republicans up for a huge loss. Yeah, like Nate Silver predicting a huge win for Hillary. We'll see. Sam Murzowski back right after this.
Talk radio.
790 KABC.
What's the expression? Is it April showers bring May accidents? Is that what it is? We got so much rain, right? The roads are even worse than they normally are. And potholes everywhere, gravel, loose dirt. And that does not help road safety, does it? No, in fact, people are now slipping and sliding out there more than they ever have. And we're going to have rain again this weekend, supposedly. So this means, look, be safe out there. But if something happens to you or a loved one, and you are facing that phone call, you got to call the insurance company and deal with the whole mess. Don't do it. Don't go at it alone. Give sweet James Bergner, the lawyer we trust here on the program, a call. James will take care of you. He'll go through everything. And you know, most importantly, you don't want to be talking to the insurance company, because the only thing the insurance company wants is to get you to tell them things that will help them fight your case, not help you, fight against you. So free consultation to anyone that calls. And remember, that's the most important thing. Everybody deserves a free consultation with a great lawyer and to get the straight skinny on the case and know what to do. Knowledge is power. So 800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. That's the number. And also the website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Nation, we're back. And rounding out this hour, fastest hour here on evening radio, having a great time. So, you know, it is interesting to me, you know, why this whole fascination with this, where the Democrats are. Because, you know, I'm looking at the Republican Party. Of course, they've got their frustrating shortcomings. But I'm just always fascinated by when really intelligent, well-paid, sophisticated people look at a particular problem and get it wrong. That to me is always a head scratcher. So many people are, and I'm not talking about Hillary. I'm talking about all the, you know, all the ground people, the strategists, the political thinkers, the Nate Silvers of the world, the journalists out there who are kind of just not quite understanding exactly what's going on. The abortion thing is important. The saying, look, you can't be a Democrat if you can't run for as a Democrat if you support a pro-life position. It's a non-starter for a party that needs every vote. Because you're not just saying that to the candidates. You're saying that to the people who vote for the candidates. Right? You can't exclude a candidate with a position without excluding the people, the folks out there who would vote for that candidate and for whom that position is important. It's so unbelievably arrogant. And that's the thing. Nobody's connecting the dots. And the reason they keep harping about organizing and ground game and 50 state strategy is that's where the money is. All these people in politics, they make so much money off of the ground game and getting out the vote. But really what they ought to focus on is the message. And their message sucks. All right, we're done here. Back tomorrow night, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Talk to you then.
Can't stop addicted to the shindig. Chop chop, it says I'm gonna win big. Choose not to life of imitation. Distant thoughts into the reservation.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.